the vibes. Welcome back to another episode of the Hoop Genius podcast, brought to you by NBA 2K26. And it's not just another episode. This is a legendary episode. This is a Hall of Fame episode. This is a championship episode. You don't want to hear me yap on too much. Before we start our conversation with Mr. Isaiah Thomas, I just kindly ask that you please subscribe to the YouTube channel, to the Spotify, to the Apple, to whatever platform you're listening on. If you're listening on audio, please do give us a 5-star review. If you're listening on YouTube and watching on YouTube, please leave a comment, like the video, it helps boost it in the algorithm. Ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, part one. You see how I'm saying part one? Because there's going to be a part two. Part one of our conversation with the great Isaiah Thomas. Isaiah, welcome to the show. Thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedule. How have you been keeping, sir?
All good. Just busy trying to keep up with the NBA and also get some business stuff that I'm doing. So all good. No issues. And trust everybody as well on your end.
Absolutely. I was honored the other day when we put out the post announcing this podcast returning for this season, now that BJ and Scott have left and Coach Sir has joined the team. And Isaiah actually commented on the post. And when I first saw the notification, I was like, there's no way this is the real Isaiah Thomas. I looked at it. I was this is an absolute honor that a true legend of the game, I'm not even going to list off the accolades and everything that this man has won, but a true legend of the game is tapped in with the Hoop Genius podcast. I appreciate that more than words can describe. And I believe you two gentlemen have got a long history spanning probably longer than my entire lifetime. When did you guys first connect? When did you first cross paths in the basketball world?
Well, in the basketball world, we first crossed paths when he was an assistant coach for Atlanta and they were beating us consistently. We lost to him in the playoffs. Was it 86 you guys beat us when you were in Atlanta?
Yeah, probably. You were playing in the Silver Dome still.
Yeah. And I knew he was a disciple of Hubie Brown. And Hubie is one of my favorites. And everything that Hubie, has touched has really, turned to gold, so to speak. And what they were doing in Atlanta defensively, I thought it could help our team. And sure enough, he became available, and all of us as players was like, we need to get that guy. And that's how I believe that's the first time we kind of met, right?
Well, that's the first time we talked without cursing at each other during the game. Yeah. Yeah. And because we had due to playoffs, when you have great playoff series, they say rivalries start, right, Isaiah? But if it's, you don't hug and kiss like they do now. Back then, it was real disdain for the other guys, which is healthy. And we had great players in Dominique and Doc Rivers and those guys and Tree Rollins, and Isaiah had a terrific squad. And then he beat us the following year, man, and on the most incredible shot that I saw the other day, and it pissed the shit out of me off when I saw it. And then he starts in this, because Isaiah just can't make a shot. He's got to dance and celebrate in it. And it's one of his most famous dancing things.
Should I tell you something, that Isaiah? I think that you've probably forgotten this. When I was a young man, I was at a basketball camp in London, and you were at the basketball camp in London, right? Mm-hmm. And we were playing, doing some drills, so on and so forth. Then you came to me and you said, Mo, well, you didn't say Mo, you didn't know my name back then, but you said, listen, young man, you said, when you do your crossover, you got to dance with it. And I said, what do you mean? You said, you're kind of stiff with the crossover. It's kind of robotic. You got to dance. You know how to dance. You got to get it with the left and the right. Changed my life. So I know you probably don't remember that, but just know it did change my life. And so that dancing has been a constant theme throughout for you.
Well, I hope it helped you, and I hope you still dance.
I still dance, but that's more in the club these days than on the basketball court, unfortunately.
Same thing. Same moves.
Absolutely. When it comes to the basketball court nowadays, I've just got the fade away from the post, and I've got a catch and shoot. That's all I've got left with these knees. But I wanted to talk about the concept of greatness, because you are one of the all-time great players in the history of basketball as a sport, right? You can't talk about the NBA, you can't talk about the point guard position in particular without talking about Isaiah Thomas. But there was one particular year I wanted to talk to you about, because you posted it on your Instagram the other day, and it was when you beat Magic, Bird, and Jordan in one playoff run, which is an insane achievement because the three of them are all-time greats when it comes to the NBA as well. Is that your proudest year of your career, your proudest achievement, or where does that rank for you amongst the many things that you've accomplished?
Yeah, definitely one of them. Because when we beat them, and I was the leader of my team, they were the leader of their teams, and they were the highest scorers on their team, with the except for Magic. He wasn't the highest scorer on his team, and we were playing a different style. And I may have been still today one of the only players to win back-to-back championships while leading a team in scoring and assist. And the way we were doing it back then, as a small guard, having to do it against, bigger players, we were going so against the grain. For me, not only beating them, but beating them when they were in their MVP years, right? So when they were at the zenith and the highest of their games, they were MVP of the leagues. And to beat them when they were at their best, and when I was at my best, that's what competition is all about. You don't, you know, I don't, you don't take pleasure in beating people when they're down. You take a lot of pleasure in beating your opponent when he's at his best and you're at your best, and you throw it up and you say, okay, let's see who wins. And so when they were all MVP players of the NBA in the league at that time, that's when I beat them. I didn't beat them on the downside. I beat them when they were at their best. And that's what I'm proud of.
Yes,
No,
sir.
Isaiah, when I blessed that Hubie Brown was my high school coach, and then he brought me to the NBA. I was 27. I didn't know what the hell I was doing. Didn't know anything about the NBA. Luckily, he was patient with me, and Mike Fratello was with us, who was a great coach, as you know. And the three of us were there in Atlanta, and I didn't know what the hell I was doing. And then after 10 years, when I came with you, so I had a great background. Chuck, I had known since I was 14 years old. So Chuck really gave me a really different philosophy for newbie, which was good for me to round me out. But you taught me and the other guys on the squad, but you in particular taught me how to win in the NBA. And I'll never forget it. I went up to you the first few days I was there and I said, "What's our goals? What's our philosophy?" And I still teach it to this day. And you said, "We only worry about winning our next game, the game that night," you said. And I said, "Wow." We were always programmed in Atlanta to look at the next five games, four, five at home, five on the road. And you said, "Don't worry about only the next game." I said, "Great." And then you said, "We only have one goal for the season, to win a championship. We always wanted to make the playoffs." And you know what we did? We made the playoffs every year. That was it. And so you taught me that. But also, the biggest thing is you taught me the style of play. And to this day, still 35 years removed, it's the style of play that I try to teach coaches at college and pro level. And they keep going away from it. And I think the distinct style that you had was you got to win with defense and rebounding. And the offensive credibility of getting your best players to most shots. Right?
It's a simple, it's a simple way of winning, but it's the hardest way of winning, because everyone has to be truly unselfish about winning the basketball game and totally committed to it.
Right.
And the team that gets the most shots normally is going to win. How do you get the most shots? You defend and you rebound. And when you look at the NBA, today, I think it's easier to win in today's game than back then,
Right.
because shot selection, keyword, shot selection is so poor right now. So I would say 65 to 70% of the shots are missed today. So if you rebound 100% of the 60 to 65% of shots that are missed, you're going to get more shot attempts than the other team. And if you don't turn it over, you're going to get more shot attempts, and then you'll get to the foul line. Now, everyone talks about, trying to shoot 43 pointers and, all that other stuff, but you take 43 pointers and you're missing, 70% of them. If I get the rebound on your 70% of misses and you don't get offensive rebounds, I'm going to beat you. And
Right.
if I happen to have a good shooting night on my end, you're going to get destroyed. So it was a simple way of going about winning. And what everyone talks about in terms of analytics right now, we used to call it statistics.
Right.
So we had a formula of how do we win. We never tried to play like anyone else. We couldn't play like the Lakers. We
Yep.
couldn't play like Chicago. And the formulas that they had for winning and their measurements for winning had to be different than ours.
Right.
So our criteria for winning, and that's why I say we was going so against the grain, our criteria for winning is what I just outlined. We would rebound, we would defend, we would take good shots, good quality shots, we'd get a good shot down every time, and 9 times out of 10, we would win the basketball game.
If we had a time machine and we could bring you from your prime to the modern NBA, is there a team that you look at and you kind of think that your style of play would fit best with in the current NBA?
I think I could fit on any team,
Yeah.
on any basketball team that you pick. I think I would have success with that team. And if I could, hey, if I can win in an era where you guys talk about the top, when you list the top six or seven players ever, right? Four of them might beat. I'm gonna say that again. When you make your list of the top, 10 players ever, right? Four of those guys I beat. So if you're talking about playing in an era where they're not in the top 10, I think I do all right on any team.
If you were in this league, because guys talk all the time, or if this player from the 80s or 90s was in the NBA today, he'd average 50, and then people say, oh, no, but the game has changed so much. How many points is Isaiah Thomas averaging in the NBA in 2025?
It's not a matter, and this is where I fought against the system when I was a player, because everyone judged you statistically and they wanted to judge you as an individual. And what I did was said, no, we're going to work as a team. And I think still today, Brendan, and correct me if I'm wrong, we may be still the only team that won a championship where no player averaged over 20 points a game.
Right.
And I think we had six or seven players in double
Double
figures.
figures, right.
That's how you win basketball games. So when you ask me about how many points I would have scored, that's a loser's mentality in the way I played the game, in the way I thought about going about winning championships. Because you got to remember, I wasn't 6'7". I wasn't blessed with genetic gifts, right? I wasn't blessed with the genetic gifts of height, size, and weight. So I had to find a way to win that was totally different than the way the criteria was judging the 6'8 and the 6'9 guy. Because they were always shooting, like you say, you were a good post player. Well, Jordan was a great mid-post player, probably the greatest mid-range scorer we've ever seen in the game. Arguably, he or Kobe, right? So they're playing on the post. And if you're saying, well, this guy's shooting 53% from 12 feet, of course he is. Most of my shots were coming, from beyond that range. So my field goal percentage was going to be a little different. Laimbeer's field goal percentage was going to be different than Kareem's. Kareem is, shooting a sky hook from 5 feet. Laimbeer's shooting, 20, 25 feet. So when you say who's got the best field goal percentage, of course, individually, that guy's going to look better. But when you put us together collectively, we win. And that's what it's all about. So How many points I would score, it all depends on what night we'd had to win.
If you had to,
I
if you had to
Yeah, I like
assemble,
that.
if you had to assemble a starting five around yourself, right? So you're playing a point guard. You've got four guys to pick from the current NBA to be on your team, and you can only pick one other all-star kind of player. And then we want guys playing roles. What would your lineup be?
From today's current
Yeah.
NBA, I'm not quite sure. Because you look at talent and skill, I look at mentality, right? And if I don't know them personally, so I couldn't say like what their mentality is. Now their skill level, you can look at their skill level and say, well, this one fits, this one fits. But from a mentality standpoint, I'm about mental. Mental is to physical as four is to one. And when we always talked about our team in Detroit, we described ourselves as a mentally tough team. Everyone else described us as a physically tough team. So I'm not avoiding your question, but I'm just trying to think through like the type of mentally tough concentration players and people, more so people than players, that I would want to play with, that I would say, okay, we can win a championship with this group of guys. So I don't know them because I don't know them. I don't know them personally. So that's a tough question for me to truly answer.
I'd say when we talk about, I always ask players when I talk to teams, how many NBA stars are they? And it's so funny, they think about the salaries, so they'll say 50. And I'll say, I think it's more like 2 or 3% of the league, 10 players or stars, maybe 15 if you're generous. That means we have 435 role players, right? And it's nothing to be, we won with role players. There's nothing, great defenders, great rebounders, great screeners, great shooters, etc. That what makes up a great team, just like in football. Some of the favorite role players that you played with or played against that you liked.
Well, Bill Laimbeer,
Absolutely.
I mean, exceptional. He by far is my favorite because what he was capable of doing in his role, he changed the game in his role because what you call a stretch big right now that everybody's looking for, he was comfortable enough to shoot a 15 and 18 foot shot every night when everybody wanted him to go into the post. So his stubbornness in terms of, staying in his lane and knowing what he can and can't do, gave us great comfort. When I look at who else in the league that I would probably wanted to, you look at James Worthy, who was with the Lakers at that time. Magic had, Worthy and Scott and Kareem, but I thought like, Worthy was a guy that I always looked at that I said if I could play with him. And then on the other side, I would have Larry Bird, So Bird, Worthy, Laimbeer, and at the guard position, I Dumars and I were pretty good, so I stick with Joe. I stick with my backcourt, maybe.
I agree. I agree. That's a pretty damn good team, you saw, I laugh when they put the Mount Rushmores up nowadays, and I'm not trying to live in yesterday, but Larry Bird never gets put in it, and he scores. Fatella and I
Everybody.
were pretty good defensive team. He scored 60 plus points against us in New Orleans one night. 60 plus points, and Larry, I know I've talked to him about this. We were playing 12 games in New Orleans that year because we couldn't draw anyone in the Omni. And I came in from scouting a college game, and the fellow, the bellman at the desk, said, "Coach, you're going to win tonight." And I said, "Why?" He said, "Larry Bird was out with Rick Roby till 4 in the morning." And I said, "All right." He put 60 plus points on us that night. 60. And with a hangover, probably, you know, but he was so good. Passer, rebounder, everything.
And the key is, Brendan, right? If he wanted to, he could have did it every night.
Every night. Yeah.
You
Good
know,
call.
when you look back at off key stat, right? When you look back at off field goal attempts a night per person, very few of us shot 20 times a night. Like Jordan was the first volume shooter that entered into our league, where he would take, you know, every night he would get, you know, 22, 25 attempts,
And a
right?
lot of free throws.
And a lot of free throws. And then Iverson, you know, came along. But before that, everybody was averaging like 16, 17 shot attempts. Now, if you gave Bird 30 shot attempts
Man.
era, and also during that era, and not, and when we talk about it, and we remember, and how we remember it, and how people talk about it, are two totally different things, I'm finding out. So when I look at the 80s, hey man, the Bird was the dude, man. There was he was the guy, like in Magic and Kareem, you know, Dr. J, them, those were the guys, you
Yeah.
know, and everyone was trying to beat the Celtics. The Celtics, Lakers, 76ers, those were great, great teams. And we were fortunate enough to come along and beat them. But that dude, 33 and white, 33 and green, hey, that he was the dude, man. He was the guy.
Don't worry, fellas. I think I'm the only person aged 30 or below that's keeping Larry Bird on that Mount Rushmore. And I think another player that people often forget about is Hakeem Olajuwon. That's another player I think nowadays gets overlooked when they talk about, you know, the all-time greatest to ever do it. A modern great player that I wanted to talk to you about, Isaiah, is Stephen Curry. Because, you know, you're one of the greatest point guards, if not the greatest point guard to ever do it. And you and Steph are the only two guys, if my memory serves me correctly, to win championships as the best, quote unquote, best player on your team as a smaller guard. But the point guard position has evolved so much that Coach and I were talking about this earlier, that Steph, even though he plays on the team sheet, the point guard position, he's not a true point guard. I wanted to talk to you about the evolution of the point guard position and how now it's become more of a scoring role. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, so I would say that Draymond Green truly is the classical point guard for Golden State. Steph is listed as the point guard, and as you say, the evolution of the point guard position is now a scoring point guard. And I would look at myself as being the seed and the root and the tree that birthed all the scoring point guards today. Because again, as a scoring point guard that led his team in scoring and assist, right? No one has ever done that combined. But what we were able to birth in Detroit is allowing the point guard to be your leading scorer, to handle the basketball, to have the basketball, create, dictate shot selection for your team, and everything evolved after that. And so when I look at the scoring point guards who have won and who are trying to win, I thank my coaches and Coach Sir and Chuck Daly and Ronnie Rothstein and all who came through the through our way, Coach Malone, for allowing me and trusting me enough to score from that position. And then everyone else, every other team since then, and I say this respectfully, when you talk about Magic, when you talk about Jordan, and you talk about Kareem, and you talk about Bird, I would say every NBA team right now that I see is looking for a backcourt that looks like Isaiah Thomas, Joe Dumars, and Vinnie Johnson. Everybody wants to score from the perimeter now, as opposed to the way they used to do it.
The idea of having the best guards in the NBA on one team as a trio made life just impossible for other teams to play against. And I saw it in an NBA exhibition game the other night where a very good point guard, a very accomplished guy, was denied the ball in bounds. And he ran away from the ball. And he ran down the floor and went and hid in the five-out offense, right? Whereas if anyone ever wanted to be crazy enough to come up to deny you, you would just go down. Joe or Vinny would bring it up, and then you would come off of screens, and now you were lethal because now you had the ball with a live dribble 17 feet from the basket or even closer, which made it even dumber for them to do, at least, in my opinion. Why do we? Do you think with all the copycat offense, the five out offense that's being run in the league, and it's almost like in pro football, if everyone ran the same offense, which they don't, why do you think guys do that? Why do you think people are doing that?
I just think that, forgive me when I say this, I do think that while we talk about the players evolving, I'm not sure our coaches have evolved as much as our players have. And there used to be a time when coaching in the NBA, everyone had their own different style, right? Hubie Brown didn't coach like Pat Riley. Phil Jackson had a totally different system than Billy Cunningham. We played totally different than the Lakers, the Celtics, and the Bulls. There were different styles. So now when they say it's a copycat league, back then that was an insult. Back then that was an insult to say you are copying somebody else's stuff,
Good call.
because everyone had their own style. And coaches would get fired or whatever. Now, coaches got fired back then because of personality conflicts. You never saw an NBA coach and said, "Oh, that guy don't know what he's doing." You never saw a coach and you could say that guy didn't know what you're doing. When I look at the NBA now, it's the same, 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 same. Like you say, everybody runs five out, right? We never ran a triangle. We never, we never ran Boston's 3-5, with Bird and Parrott. We never played like that. We had our own style. When you look at the five out style right now, Brendan, there's really only one play. That's high screen and roll. It's high screen and roll, and then you got to be good enough to dribble drive, draw somebody, and kick it to the 3-point line.
The dribble.
They eat the same. They talk the same. Their cultures are the same. Their language are the same. They dress the same. They fly out at the same. They wear the same clothes. And how about this? When you look at the NBA right now, everybody is the same size and the same body type. Same, 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 same. How about that?
I think there's a
That's
couple
pretty.
exceptions.
Name them.
Jokic.
His body type
He
is.
don't he's not like all the other NBA players. He's off
No,
watching his horses race. He's not doing the same things that the other players are doing when we're talking about outside of the court and on the court as well. Go
time
ahead,
out.
go ahead, go ahead.
Yeah, outside of the court, he's watching his horses race. Now, outside of the court, if you were to look at somebody else, they may like dogs, they may like concerts, everybody has their different things that they like outside of the court. But just because one don't like horse racing doesn't mean that they're not spending the same amount of time doing the same amount of things away from the court.
Well, you know, when we talk about the league and the evolution of it, and as you've spoken to the coaching evolution and
I'm a push back on evolution because we throw that word
yeah,
around
in quotation marks, evolution.
without understanding the definition of evolution, right? These guys didn't grow a different limb, a different leg, or anything else. The only thing that has changed in the game of basketball is that you shoot from further distance. I'm gonna say that again. The only thing that has changed in the game of basketball is that you shoot from further distance and you accept people missing more from further distance. You talk about if a guy shoots 30% from the 3-point line, that's great. The league I used to come from, if you shot 30%, your ass was getting cut. You out of the league, right? You were out of the league. Now that changed when Iverson was the MVP shooting 39% from the field, because then everyone only started talking about how many points you score, how many points you score, as opposed to, how the game was for. So evolution in the game evolving, I don't buy the I don't buy that word. So you guys should find another
The changes of the league.
thing. Okay,
Okay,
the game changed.
so I know we haven't got too long left, but I wanted to talk to you about defense because I know you guys on your Detroit team took a lot of pride in your defense, and there's a lot of debate amongst, NBA media and NBA fans and so on and so forth now about defense now versus defense in the 80s, the 90s, hand checking, zone defenses, so on and so forth. From your perspective, what's your opinion on the defensive rules now, the level of physicality that defense is played with, the intensity of the defenses that are there in the NBA? Because we see an uptick of it in the playoffs, but during a regular season, it's kind of missing a little bit. But I wanted to get your take on that.
So I'm gonna speak from experience, and I'm gonna have to throw my credentials on the table when I say this. So my high school team was the best defensive team in the state of Illinois. My college team at Indiana, we were the best defensive team that won the championship until UConn broke our record. We won every tournament game by double digits. My NBA team was the best defensive team, and still is copied today. So high school, college, MBA. So I think I am an authority on defensive play, right?
Absolutely.
Participation and observation. Now, what is different? The difference is people don't guard anymore because they don't have good fundamental foot speed skills. They're not taught defense. Most players spend, when they go practice and they'll spend, 3 hours in the gym practicing offense. Very few players, if any, will go in and practice defensive slides, hand moving, faking that, getting that offensive player off balance, making him take tough shots, making him miss shots, right? So what has changed? It's not about hand checking. It's not about physicality. It's about your mentality, right? Who takes the challenge and say, I want to guard that person and I'm not going to let him score. We look at games now and somebody gets 35 and the other guy gets 30 and everybody's good. Yeah, we're good tonight. I would
Right.
be so humiliated with a guy scoring 30, 40 points on me. It kept me up all night. That's why we came up with the Jordan rules. I was like, this guy, like he did, Brendan, he just got like 45 points on us. I'm walking the beach at night trying to figure out how to stop this guy, how to get, so it's not like, there's no shame, there's no embarrassment when a guy gets 30 points on you. It's like, yeah, he's that good. He got 30 on me. I'm like, hell no, you are not going to get 30 points on me.
Right.
Jerry Eves still hold the record for the most points scored on Isaiah Thomas. I think he scored 44 in the Silverdome against me. And by the way, he only averaged 6 points a night, but that night he got so hot, I think he got 40 on me. And it still bothers me today. Left-handed Jerry East, Utah Jazz, pulled me out that night.
Oh, Isaiah, when we, I watched it last week, an exhibition game. Five starters on the team that won did not play. Okay, that's no problem. Okay, they still won the game, scoring 133 points in the exhibition season with their five starters out. I don't know how you can play that way. If anyone scored 100 against us, we walk in the locker room. Chuck and I never had to say, Brendan Malone, we never had to say boo. These guys were at each other's throats about not showing up, not playing, not guarding, right? I mean, they were pissed off, even if we won, even if we won.
You could not be around me as a player and a person and not be a good defender. From my background and the way I played, no, 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 and no. Just wasn't going to happen.
And we had guys
Being
that
on
were,
teams that way also.
I was just saying, we had guys on our team that were not great individual defenders, but team defensively, they were outstanding, right?
Outstanding. But
Outstanding. And that,
and that goes to the concentration that, again, the mental toughness that we came to the game with is like, okay, how are we going to work together as a team and as a unit to stop the opponent from scoring? To stop the opponent from scoring. We never came to the game with the thought of, oh man, I'm gonna get 25 points on this guy, and you gotta get 30 points, and you gotta.
you're right.
I mean, that if you would have talked like that in our locker room, A, we probably would have went to the GM and told him, hey, you gotta get this guy out of here, right? Because we were all about stopping you from scoring. And we thought we were good enough to score on anybody, but the main thing was how are we gonna stop you from scoring every night?
Isaiah, let me tell a quick story. My first game ever with Isaiah and the Pistons were in the Palace. And we go to shoot around. And for 10 years with UB Brown and Mike Fratello, when I do the shoot around, I'm going to tell them how we're going to defend the play. That's how I've been taught. It's been okay. All of a sudden, I said, okay, here's what the Knicks are going to run tonight. And let's say I'm just making up. It's Derek Harper coming off of Patrick Ewing's side pick and roll. And I said, and Isaiah, this is, and Chuck goes, hold on. And he goes, Isaiah, how do you and Lambeer want to guard this? And I'm like going, we just had a coaches meeting and he didn't say any of that we were going to talk about that. And they just told me how they wanted to defend that. And that's what we did. I go back in the locker room after the practice. I said, Isaiah, Chuck, why didn't you tell me we were going to do that? He said, I really don't care how you want to defend it because you're not playing. So those guys, to get them to buy into what they know what's going on better than us. And it taught me forever how to coach defense and prepare a team by letting the players take ownership and tell you what they want to do, because they'll do it way better than if a coach tells them what they want to do. Is that fair?
That's fair, and that's a there's a happy marriage that
Sure.
communication that comes when the coaches respect the players' intellect for defensive and offensive play, and we were fortunate enough to have you, Chuck, and Brendan as coaches to say. To give us the opportunity to say, well, how do you want to play it? And what's best for you on this night? Because what you don't understand is that on this night, hey, Lambeer may have a poor hamstring trying to play. He may have a sprain, and I may have a sprained ankle trying to
No
play.
load management.
I may not be good enough going right today. I may not be good enough going left today. You know, we're playing and we're battling through injuries and everything else. So on this night, this is what's best for my body, right? Now, if I'm 100% and everything else, we can do all this other stuff you're talking about. But on this night, no, this is the third game. You know, I let's do it this way. And then we all come together and we work at it.
And Mo, we played any postman in the league straight up. We called it just 1-on-1. And then we're playing Utah one night, and they ran a great play where they would have Thurl Bailey come up and back screen, rip screen, Karl Malone to top of the key. He'd come into the post, play number 13, they called it. And so as they're doing that, I say to our friend Rick Mahorn, I say, "Hey, Rick, how do you want to play that?" He said, "When his ass comes off the bus, we're going to double team him." So we adapted every game, like Isaiah said. And that's from, if I put him out there and said, "You play him straight up," then he might get embarrassed, might get in foul trouble. I showed him I didn't ask him what he wanted to do. And then Mahorn plays the guy, double team, and he gets like 12 points in the game. That's
Hey.
plenty. That was beautiful.
Last story, and then I gotta go. So
Sure.
we never wanted all players to get embarrassed, right? And Jordan was a phenomenal player, like one of the best ever. And he could embarrass you. So there's not a game that we played where we didn't honor and respect his talent. And how do we honor and respect his talent? We double teamed him. We trapped him. Now, there would be some nights when he would kind of be off, and Joe would be like, "No, I got him right now." Right? But once he got going, it was like, "Hey, Zeke, you got some help," right? But it just wasn't like that for him. It was like that for anybody.
Any
We
right.
never let one of our players get embarrassed. And somebody dance on him and, clown him and point at him. No. That guy is going to get double teamed because we respect what he's doing. And
That's
we got to
awesome.
come back and do this again. I got to jump on this board call right now.
100%. We appreciate you taking the
Or
time.
if you guys want to hang on for 15 minutes, I'll finish this up. Come
Hey,
back.
thank you so much. Really appreciate it. That was absolutely great stuff, Isaiah. Appreciate you. Love you, man.
Love you too. Appreciate you.
Thanks.
Thank
All
you.
right.
Okay,
Coach,
Jeff.
what a fascinating conversation with the one, the only, the legendary Isaiah Thomas. I know you guys go way back. We didn't get a chance to talk about it during the show, but Isaiah mentioned it briefly. And just in case, you told this story before last season, but just in case for any new listeners, you guys coming up with the Jordan rules, do you want to speak a little bit about that?
What he was referring to, we were playing Chicago. Series is 1-1. It's game three, Eastern Conference final, 7-game series. And we're up, I believe, 19 points at the half. We're doing a great job. All of a sudden, Jordan gets hot, second half, and he goes off. I believe he scored about 37 or 39 points in the second half alone, gets 47 for the game. And they win at the buzzer by 2 points. Okay. So now we're down 2-1, Eastern Conference Finals. They think they're going to upset us. The game is in the afternoon. It's a national TV game here in the States. That night, Isaiah, the game is at Chicago's infamous Chicago Stadium. We're staying downtown Chicago, the Westin Hotel, and Isaiah lives is from Chicago. The next thing, he goes walking. Imagine this. Can you imagine an NBA superstar, one of the five best players in the league now, walking out on Lake Michigan on the sidewalk in
Insane.
the eve in the evening for hours? For hours. He's so irate. Literally at 2 o'clock in the morning, he calls my hotel room because we don't have cell phones back then. And so he calls me up in the room and he wakes me up and I said, "Yeah, what's up?" "I don't know who it is. I think it's a prank call, whatever." "It's him." And he says, "Hey, I've been out walking around on Lake Michigan for hours. I need to talk to you. Come downstairs." And I go downstairs. I'm in the hotel lobby and the two of us are there at 2:30 in the morning for an hour and a half. And he's telling me about his idea for what we eventually called the Jordan Rules, which was had a double team, Michael Jordan, and it was all based on what he calls geography of the court. If Jordan had the ball in the middle of the court, obviously he can go either way equally well. We're going to help our defensive players by forcing him to go to Jordan's left. And whoever the nearest player was on the perimeter, as soon as he puts the ball on the floor, one dribble, the nearest player is going to run and double team him. Okay. If he has the ball on either wing, we're going to force Michael to dribble to the middle of the court, and the nearest player in the middle will double team him. We don't care what position you are, guard, forward, center. So we did that. Michael would also post up, and especially if we had Dumars on him, he'd post up. But then we put Rodman on him, he would post up Rodman. We said if Michael goes into the post and he throws the ball to him, we would double team him from the top of it, from the foul line area. We would go down and double team him as the ball's in the air. And the last thing that Michael did was he would play pick and roll on the wing, coming from usually the left side to the middle. We said anytime he plays pick and roll, we're going to trap him. So those were pretty.
And also, if he ever goes into the paint, to so just knock him on his ass.
No. We never preached that. We never.
Oh,
I'll tell you. I will tell. I ended up coaching Michael's two sons in college, and I'll tell you what Michael thought of the Jordan rules later. So the next morning, we go to our film meeting with our players. I go and talk to Chuck before the meeting and say, "Listen, Isaiah and I met last night in the middle of the night, and he had some ideas. I think they're very valid. I think you should embrace them and try them." And he was just the opposite. "I don't want to hear it. It's not going to work." I was stunned. I was stunned because I knew how much Chuck wanted to win. We go to meet with the team. Isaiah and Bill Laimbeer present the Jordan rules to the players. And Joe and Dennis Rodman are the two best defensive players in the league. And they're like taken back, like it's a personal attack to them. And Chuck says, "No, I don't want to do it. It's not going to work. No way. No way." And the other players on the team said, "Let's try it. Let's try it." Chuck says, "No, it's not going to work." And they basically fight Chuck to go through with it and do it. And we go in and do it. And for the next three games, we beat him, and Michael never scores more than 19 points in a game. Okay. There's a lot of lessons there. A lot of lessons. You know, if you want to get someone to buy into something, tell them they won't work. They then committed to it. It had to do with Isaiah's philosophy of never having any player on our team. We had the two best defenders in the world on defense, and they're getting embarrassed, not because of the defense or themselves, because of Michael's greatness. So that's what happened, and that's what, hence the Jordan rules came. We never admitted that there was such a thing as Jordan rules. People would say, "Oh, these are the Jordan." We don't know what you're talking about. It's really funny. So now I'm coaching. Fast forward years after Chuck Daly passes away, I'm coaching Michael's kids, and I write a book called Chuck Daly Coaching You, play on words, because he wouldn't allow me to write a book about him while he was alive. So I handed Michael an autographed copy I did for him. He loved Chuck, and so we go out and we practice with our college team. I come back in and he goes, "This book sucks. This book sucks. What are you talking about? What are you
Typical.
talking about? I just gave it to you. I read the whole book during practice." I said, "You didn't watch your kids play?" "No, I watched them, but this book still sucks." I said, What don't you like about it? These are all the offenses that we use to beat your ass." I said, "What are you talking about?" He says, "No, you have this thing in here in the book about the Jordan rules. That's bullshit." I said, "What do you mean it's bullshit?" He said, "The Jordan rules were you knocked me on my fucking ass. That's what the Jordan rules were. That's what Michael's version of the Jordan rules were." That. I said, "Hey, Mike, I think you misread that book. I never said that in there." But those were Isaiah Thomas's rules that we put in. And you know what? And we used them against Kobe. Isaiah and I used them when we coached the Knicks against Ray Allen and Gilbert Arenas. Worked incredibly well. I believe in the philosophy of never letting the star player of a team beat you without trying to stop him. It's
Yeah,
just
without
down.
I didn't want Isaiah to get
In
mad
any
because I was going to
sport.
ask him, when we saw Luka score like 70 last season, or we see Embiid score 70, and it's like these guys are dancing through the defense. I watched Luka get 60 in a game, and he's just walking the ball up, and he just beats his man, gets to the hoop, scores a layup. And it's like, I thought what Isaiah said about there's no embarrassment or shame in the NBA anymore, because if someone has a high scoring night like that, it's just like, well, they're a superstar. That's what they do. There's no personal pride in, that's your matchup. If he's cooking you, we can help you. This is a team game. Force the other people to beat you rather than let this one guy go and score 60, 70 points.
And one thing he left out that he didn't leave out, but one of the philosophies we have against a great offensive player is now we go at him when he's on defense.
Oh,
Michael
100%.
was an absolute elite defender, but what we did is we made him play defense on Dumars
Energy.
and Vinny every time down. We just kept running plays for him to make him work. Maybe he'd be tired on the offensive end.
Yeah. You got to throw the kitchen sink and more when you're playing against an
Yeah,
all-time
so
great
really
player.
good. What an interview with the guy. I mean,
Absolutely.
he Isaiah is absolutely in I started in the NBA 47 years ago, Mo. With Hubie Brown in Atlanta. Came in the same year with Bird Magic. Okay. Isaiah is the most intelligent player I've ever had of hundreds and hundreds of players that he has a brilliance about him mentally. About the game. Physically, he was iconic. I mean, it was just, we didn't even talk about it. He scored once, scored 16 points in a minute and like 50 seconds against the Knicks, Hubie Brown in the playoffs. Imagine that. 16 points. He could do whatever he wanted on the court. So to hear him at his age now, he's so smart and everything he does, business, basketball, people, but he really
Yeah.
thinks,
And
and he's got really strong philosophy, which is beautiful.
every time he asked a question, it was always with a team first approach, which I found very insightful, which is rare, when you talk to superstar players who have accomplished a lot in the league. And also, he gave a lot of credit to, we had a whole segment about Larry Bird there, just giving credit to the other great players of his era, which you don't hear too many of these former greats doing that these days. They like to talk, some guys like to talk a lot about themselves rather than giving credit and admiration towards the other insanely talented people we've also seen.
He's like he's 10 years older. I'm 10 years older than him, and he's and ever since we got to work together, I guess 37 years ago started. He's like a brother to me, and we've worked together post Pistons and stuff, and it's just fun to get together with him and talk ball. He loves the game. He can teach the game. But more importantly, he's just got a brilliant outlook on life. That's what I like about him
An
so
all-time
much.
great, a true great, and coach, I really appreciate you getting Isaiah on show, and all the lessons that you teach as well to our listeners now this season. It's still early in the season. It's week two, week three for us on this podcast, but there's a lot more to come. We're gonna have some more interesting
Well,
conversation.
it's
Yes.
appropriate that the number one show outside the US, we start with a legend to be with a legend like yourself.
No, you're too kind. You're too kind. But soon we'll be the number one show in the US too. How about that? We
Oh, I
working.
like that. I
We
like that.
working. We working. But I did feel that Isaiah was a little bit disappointed when he asked me if I was still dancing, and I told him it was only with the ladies in the club because
No, he actually was impressed.
that
Just do that crossover move in the club.
is, that's definitely not the move. To be fair, it's more just letting them. I'm not even going to get into. I'm not going to
No,
get into that.
please.
I'm not going to get into
No.
that. But an absolutely amazing interview. Amazing insights. We're going to have to get Isaiah back for a part two during this season
Oh,
because I know there's a lot
absolutely.
more that he wants to talk about.
Yeah, get
And
the season halfway done, and boy, he'll come back on fire.
yeah.
This is what he's like. with the season not even starting. Wow. Yeah, he'll be
preseason.
on fire.
I can't wait. Coach, I appreciate you as always. To our listeners, I hope you guys enjoyed this interview. Let us know in the comments and leave a review and tell us your thoughts. We'd love to hear back from you. Hit us on social media and all of that. We'll be back on Monday with another weekly recap of everything happening from the early stages of the NBA season. And then next Thursday, another special guest. And this time, we're not even going to give you any clues. You just got to stay locked in. We might throw some clues up on Instagram. Maybe we'll give you a little hint. But
I love it.
Until then, get buckets. We'll be right back.